Who is Azog the Defiler, one of the main antagonists in the Hobbit movies? Did he exist in Tolkien's written legendarium? And if so, how was his fate different? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we cover the best in fantasy books and TV shows. The Lord of the Rings, A Song of Ice and Fire, The Witcher, and much more. If you like the sound of that, there's a subscribe button in the bottom right of your screen. Azog the Defiler is one of the standout antagonists in the Hobbit films. The white-skinned, scarred orc with a long-standing grievance against Thorin's family. And yes, he does appear in Tolkien's writings. His story is a bit different, but it's clear that he is one of the most important, if not the most important, orcs of the Third Age. Let's take a look. We're not told exactly when Azog was born, but it's more than likely that he was one of the orcs sent by Sauron to Moria, around the year 2480 of the Third Age. Sauron at the time was still recovering his strength, but after some big victories against the Free Peoples of Middle-earth, the fall of Arnor, the end of the line of kings in Gondor, the evacuation of Khazad-dûm by the dwarves in the face of the Balrog, and so on, in the first half of the age, he was forced to retreat away from Dol Guldur in the face of Gandalf, leading to centuries of so-called watchful peace. At the end of that watchful peace, Sauron re-emerged. His forces took Osgiliath in the south, he returned to Dol Guldur, and importantly for this video, he sent some orcs to Moria, now long abandoned by the dwarves, to secure it for his side. The timing of all this is hardly coincidental, by the way. The One Ring re-emerged at that very time, with its new master Sméagol, Gollum, who proceeded into the depths of the caves under the Misty Mountains. It's pretty clear that Sauron felt the ring moving, even if he didn't know exactly where or how, and felt the need to send orcs to the Misty Mountains and Moria in particular. Azog was among them, or at least rose to power among them swiftly. By the time we reach the year 2790 of the Third Age, he is the undisputed chieftain of the Orcs of Moria, which made him not just probably the most powerful orc north of Mordor, but also one of the most important figures in all Middle-earth. There were a lot of orcs in Moria, and he was their leader. But in 2790, Thror, that's Thorin Oakenshield's grandfather, decided he wanted to see Khazad-dûm for himself. The dwarves had not been there since they had been chased out by Durin's Bane, and he went alone but for one companion, Nar. The gates were open, and he went inside. Now, we should probably pause to recognise that this was a particularly brave move by Thror, more than bordering on foolhardy. Though he was nearing the end of his life anyway and had lived to lead his people fleeing from two homelands, a cold drake driving them from the Grey Mountains, then Smaug from the Lonely Mountain, and probably just hoped beyond hope that perhaps his last act might be to lead his people back to their true home. But anyway, he wasn't to know that Azog had built his empire there and would relish the chance to bait the dwarves. Azog beheaded Thror, carved his name in dwarvish runes so that the dwarves would definitely know who he was, and threw both body and head back outside the gates. Nar, Thror's companion, found them. At which point Azog, who had presumably been waiting for Nar to appear, then emerged, throwing down a small purse of worthless coins to Nar, calling him a beggar, and saying that he would allow no more dwarf beggars in the gates of Moria. He let Nar run off to tell his fellows what had happened, while the orcs hacked Thror's body to pieces. This is Azog's first and most notable appearance in the Legendarium, and it tells us a lot about him. He was cruel, confident and cunning. He could have very easily killed Nar as well as Thror, or killed Thror in a less dramatic way, but no, he wanted to send a message. He was in charge. The dwarves could come at him if they wanted. He wanted them to. With hindsight, this was not just confidence, this was hubris. Perhaps he thought this would scare off the dwarves, or perhaps he thought that the dwarves would respond and he could defeat them easily. Either way, he was wrong. Nar, of course, told Thrain, Thror's son, what had happened, and Thrain, of course, took it personally. He rallied not only his own people, Durin's folk, but the other six tribes of dwarves as well. They descended on the Misty Mountains seeking vengeance in what became known as the War of the Dwarves and Orcs. It lasted 9 years. Eventually, it came down to the Battle of Azan-ul-Zibar, which took place outside the East Gate of Moria, the very spot that Azog had thrown Thror's body years earlier. The battle that follows was a key flashback in the Hobbit movies and an important moment in dwarf history, full stop. Thrain led his army on the offensive, but they were outnumbered and had to fall back. It was during that encounter that Thorin lost his shield and had to improvise using a branch of an oak tree, hence his moniker from then on of Thorin Oakenshield. The day was saved by the arrival of Nine, Lord of the Iron Hills. He and his troop made straight for Azog, calling him out, and Azog and Nine had a furious one-on-one battle. Tolkien doesn't often focus on the details of battles, but here we do get the detail that Azog won because he played dirty. As we would expect an orc to, I suppose. Nine swung and missed, his anger getting the best of him. Azog dodged and kicked Nine in the leg, basically tripping him up, and then finished him off. At which point, we might expect an orc to immediately charge at the next dwarf for killing, but that's not what Azog did. He paused and surveyed the battleground. His army was losing. Some had been routed and were fleeing south. His personal guard had been destroyed by Nine's advance, so he decided to retreat back into Moria, regroup and fight another day. He presumably realised that not only would the Bridge of Khazad-dûm provide a perfect defensive structure, but also many of the dwarves might not wish to enter, still fearing the Balrog. He was right, and would probably have survived the day but for Dain, Nine's son, the same Dain Ironfoot who made an appearance in The Hobbit and became king of the Lonely Mountain. He saw Azog retreating, charged up, and decapitated him there and then, the same fate that Thror had suffered. Azog died there, outside the east gate of Moria, where he had thrown Thror's body. As an addendum to the story, the dwarves could have used that as the moment to try to retake Moria, but they didn't. The coalition Thrain had built ended there, and it would be another quarter of a millennium until they did finally start to rebuild Khazad-dûm, free from the fear of Orc and Balrog. Movie lovers will notice that there is a big difference here in Azog's story. In the Hobbit movies, most of those events are conflated into that one flashback battle of Azan-ul-Zibar. He kills Thror then, faces Thorin, who cuts off his forearm, and Azog lives on past that battle to terrorise the dwarves as they embark on the quest of Erebor, under orders from Sauron. This gives Thorin a personal nemesis, as well as a family grudge against orcs. It's, I suppose, good for character development, given how much extra padding those films had compared to the books, but in the books we get an extra layer. Because the orc general who led them in the Battle of the Five Armies there was Bolg. Bolg was Azog's son. By this point, Bolg had ruled the orcs for 150 years, and he will have had a family grievance, if against anyone, not against Thorin, but against Dain Ironfoot, who had killed his father and was also in that battle. Personally, I quite respect Tolkien for not actually putting either of those family grudges centre stage. Bolg does die in that battle, but it is at the hands of Beorn, not a dwarf. Beorn, whose entire race had been destroyed by orcs. Tolkien gives us the resolution of a family grudge, but it is perhaps not the one we were expecting. As an aside here, Azog being Bolg's father is part of Tolkien's in-world evidence for orcs reproducing in the manner of the children of Ilúvatar, as it says in the Silmarillion, just like elves and men, in other words. And, as another aside, there's plenty of evidence here for the orcs' longevity. But what are we to make of Azog as a character? Well, Tolkien is often accused of making orcs his stormtroopers, his enemy redshirts, the faceless bad guys who make up the majority of the antagonist's army, but are all pretty interchangeable. Anyone who has read The Lord of the Rings knows that not to be the case. Just witness the conversations overheard by the hobbits in Cirith Ungol and near Fangorn Forest, for example. But in Azog, we have perhaps the greatest exception to the generality of orcishness. Azog wasn't just a leader of orcs, he was the head of a great nation. 10,000 orcs died at that battle, and that's what was left after 9 years of war that the orcs mostly lost. Many more clearly survived or didn't emerge for the battle. Azog was a thinking orc. He didn't brutalise Thror's body for the sake of it or out of bloodlust. He wanted to send a message and waited patiently to do so, and he seems to have been at least trilingual. His actions were calculated to send a message. When he had killed Nine, he surveyed the battlefield and had the humility to realise he was losing. And he was a father. In whatever capacity orcs are capable of fatherhood, his son clearly learned enough from him to hold on to power for a century and a half. At the height of his power, Azog was one of the most powerful individuals in all Middle-earth, a leader who led from the front, cold-hearted and cool-headed, calculating and cunning, but also cruel. We shouldn't put Azog on a pedestal. He wasn't a good person, or orc, but he is a great example of how even Tolkien's bad guys aren't one-dimensional. Azog was a worthy adversary, not just another nameless orc. If you'd like to see more videos about Tolkien's Legendarium, please click on the link on the left of your screen. Or to support this channel, the best way to do that is to click on the link to my Patreon page on the right of the screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.